I'm also not used to sitting down when I preach, but today you get everything different. I was born in California. I think that's been partially what has made me different and not fit in anywhere I ever go. But my parents at one time, about time I was born, were fairly wealthy. They had a lot of money, and my dad was in advertising. He started up a newspaper, and it was extremely successful, so he started another one in a different locality, and that one pulled both of them down, and then they went broke. So we moved from California, Southern California, well, actually Northern California and Southern California. I was born in San Mateo near San Francisco. But then we moved to Branson, Missouri. And this was way before Branson, Missouri is what it is today with Silver Dollar City and all that. It was just a little wide spot in the road and only hillbillies lived there. And we lived out in the country, and it was we didn't even have electricity, actually, where the house or where we lived. So we went from very high to very low. But I was little. I was 5 years old when I lived in Branson, so that was nothing. But then my dad was in sales from then, and he started selling feed concentrates with different companies, and we moved almost every year. So about every year, I went to a different school, and I learned how to adapt quickly and to try to fit in, desperate to fit in wherever I went. I learned skills of manipulation that still cause me difficulties to this day, And eventually we went from California to Missouri to Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, and then Nebraska. And fortunately, I moved to Nebraska my sophomore year in high school. So I went all 3 years of high school in one school in Lincoln High. And those are the days where I learned how to smoke and I learned how to drink. And I did a lot of both of those things. And then in 1960... Five, I probably met Mary Kay, and we were married in 66, and probably the best thing that ever happened to me was to meet her and to marry her, and I feel very grateful for her. My life from then on has been a bit of a roller coaster, and it reminds me, I'll tell you some of it before I give you any illustrations, but started drinking then and did a lot of drinking. I don't know if I was considered myself an alcoholic, but I got drunk every weekend. And not only did I get drunk every weekend, but I get sick every weekend. You would think, you know, let's put these two together and say they don't really fit very well for you, but they never did come together. And I was raised in the Episcopal Church, and my mother would drag me off to the Episcopal Church when I was little. Mary Kay was raised in the Catholic Church, and she was a good Catholic, and she'd go to church every Sunday. And she would periodically try to drag me off to church with her, to the Catholic Church, and needless to say, I didn't very often go. I think I went to church on Christmas and Easter, maybe. I did kind of like going to church at midnight on Christmas Eve. That was kind of a kicker, so I'd go to church Christmas Eve. But needless to say, I never got anything out of the Episcopal Church or the Catholic Church, either one. I was desperate in my life to accomplish something or be somebody. I remember at one point in my life, I worked testing rocks and aggregate in Lincoln. We were living in Lincoln at the time. And I'd see these guys that hauled concrete, and they're ready-mix trucks. And these guys, not, you'll see this stuff is stupid and dumb, but this is the way my thinking was. And these guys seem so bold and confident. I think that, you know, if I could just be a ready-mix driver, then I'd have the confidence and boldness, you know, I think that I really wanted to have. So I tried driving a ready-mix truck for a while, and I was I was not a good employee. I wanted to get done and hurry. I didn't care about the people I was working with or working for or the contractors that I was working with. And I'm thinking that people had to begin to dread to see me even coming on the place. But somewhere along the line, there was a guy, I'll even mention his name today. His name is Bill Hall. Bill Hall lives here in Fairbury, interestingly enough. But Bill Hall worked at this testing lab where I worked for a time. And one little comment he made to me, I think God used it to change my life. And he said to me, he said, "Mike," says, "you're the most intellectual person I ever met." And intellectual? I thought I was always dumb as a post. I tried to go to school right out of high school, tried to go to college. And I didn't do very well in high school, and now I'm in college, and all I'm doing is drinking and playing cards and not going to class, and I'm wondering why my grades are terrible and why they pretty soon ask me not to come back to college anymore. So I'm thinking, you know, I'm not college material. So I tried a lot of other things to try to be somebody. And then Bill Holt tells me I'm the most intellectual person he's ever met. And you might think that's, I mean, it's just a comment, just one thing one person says. But I thought, well, maybe I'm not as stupid as I think I am, and maybe I could even go back to school. So I decided to go back to school. About the same time, I discovered some other stuff called marijuana. And I really liked this stuff, and it was cheaper than alcohol, it's cheaper than beer, and it would last for a long time. I'd feel good on it and didn't have a hangover the next morning. So I started into marijuana, and then pretty soon I found some stuff called LSD, and I was going to school at the time, but I was to a place now in my life where I was seeking some sort of truth. And so I actually went back to school to seek truth. I started studying psychology, and I figure in study of behavior, there's some kind of truth there. So I started studying psychology, and there's all kinds of different schools of psychology. There's the Freudian psychology, and then there's learning school, and there's all kinds of different schools of psychology. None of them even get along. So I'm not learning any truth in psychology, so I keep pursuing it with marijuana and LSD. And about this time, I'd run into people on campus that, and I always seem to be such a sucker for somebody that's coming up and wanting to share something with me. And they'd come up and they'd share something spiritual, and I would indulge them for a few minutes, and then I'd say, you know, I don't have the time. I don't believe this stuff anymore. And I had finally come to a place where I remember telling my mother, who was she was an Episcopalian, but she was definitely a believer. And I remember telling her one day that I didn't even believe in God. And that about broke the poor woman's heart. And fortunately, she didn't die before I actually did get to a place where I knew God. But it was a road. I tried to get Mary Kay interested in drugs, too. And I think she would smoke pot with me sometimes, but just never get into it like I did and never be seeking truth like I was seeking truth and trying to find the secrets of the universe. And she once did mescaline with me, I think, but she shied away from all the hallucinogenic stuff, just confused her brain, and she wasn't in a search like I was. But I was desperately searching for something. But as I told you, whenever somebody from on campus, somebody who knew God, whether it was Campus Crusade or Navigators, whoever would come up to me, I'm seeking truth, but I'm not seeking your kind of truth. I'm not interested in this Jesus Christ stuff, so stay away from me. And so I was seeking anything but the solid truth. And I thought I was finding some things in drugs. And we would go over, we had a circle of friends where we would do some of this stuff, some of the smoking pot almost every day now, I think. I enjoyed it so much better than alcohol. And there was this one place in Lincoln where we'd go. We'd go over to Carol's house. And Carol had a whole bunch of people living there. We'd smoke dope and stuff there, and Carol had a husband whose name was Bill. Bill was, I think, even instrumental in bringing a lot of drugs into Lincoln back in those days, but he was really big into LSD. And he was doing so much of it that it was really frying his brain, and he was in and out of the regional center, the mental institution in Lincoln. And one of the times when Bill was in there, Carol started living with Rick. And Bill found out, he eventually got out of the regional center, went up to Omaha where they had spent their honeymoon, and blew his brains out. That's Bill. I remember some of the people in those circles wanting to sit down and try to analyze all this stuff and figure this stuff out and come to some kind of solutions or truth or something. And I didn't care. I mean, I didn't care if, I guess, if Bill lived or died. And so then, however, everybody was living together in this house, and Carol started getting interested in Paul, Rick's half-brother, instead of Rick. Well, Rick goes into the bedroom, blows his brains out. Carol had two suicides inside of a year, and she felt deeply responsible, and you can understand why. And again, that didn't bother me very much. I liked Rick, but, you know, what's one more death? Who cares? Because I was into pot, and all I'd have to do is smoke another joint or drop another acid, and I'd feel better or search for truth. So I kept doing all of this stuff. Right about this same time, and I've shared, I think, to you here about the center of the universe. It was about this time that I went to the center of the universe. The center of the universe actually is at 35th and R in Lincoln. You probably thought maybe the center of the universe was way off somewhere. It really is remarkably close. And I was with actually Carol's brother, Bob. And Bob and I used to do a lot of drugs together. And we'd drop acid and then we'd go for a walk. And we'd see some remarkable things. And one time as we're walking, we dropped this at somewhere, I think it was like at 32nd and T Street in Lincoln. And we're walking off toward, Wyuka Cemetery in Lincoln. And as I'm on R Street, and I'm kind of coming up, walking down a hill, and the wind is picking up. And it's kind of lit up in the middle of the intersection at 35th and R, and the wind is just whipping. And it's whipping in a circle. It was like a cyclone thing. I'm on LSD, okay? So give me a break. And I'm walking toward this. At the same time, I'm having these thoughts. It feels like something is kind of flying through me, like something spiritual or something. I don't know, you know. And I'm obsessed with these thoughts of Bill, who had committed suicide years ago. And I'm thinking, well, maybe Bill's trying to communicate with me or something, you know. And I keep walking toward this intersection of 35th and R, and the wind is picking up even more and more and more. And you can see the dust spiraling up from the middle of the street. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm always on this quest for truth, right? And so I'm thinking, I'm approaching the center of the universe, the center of life and death. There's the cemetery over here, just like a block away. And I'm walking toward the center of this street, and I'm facing the cemetery, and it's cold and clammy, and the wind's whipping around. I turn away from the cemetery, and it's warm. And I'm thinking, here I am. I'm approaching the center of everything. Life, death, light, dark, yin yang. I'm moving toward the center of life. And then there's this brass plate in the middle of the street. It's not there anymore. I've gone to check. But it about this big, and I'm standing on it. I walk over and I'm figuring this is the center of the universe, right? So I'm standing on this plate. And it has some writing on it. So I'm thinking I'm coming to the center of the universe, and there's some sort of a message here from God or from somebody. I was at least moving closer and closer to believing that at least there was a God. I didn't deny the existence of God. So I'm standing on the brass plate. I'm looking down at it, and it says, "Penalty for destroying monument." Why this is written on this brass plate in the middle of 35th and R, I have no clue. But now I'm thinking I'm cursed, okay? I feel this grip in the back of my neck. It just about took me to my knees, and I back away from this thing, and I says, I've gone to the center of the universe, and I'm cursed from this. We're not supposed to go to the center of the universe. And now I'm walking, and I was always a positive thinker. I mean, all I'd have to do to get in a better mood is just smoke a joint and be happy, you know? And I'd always think positive about stuff. But now my thoughts are just destruction. I can't think anything positive. I'm going to get back to Carol's house, and she will have slit all her kids' throats, and there's going to be blood everywhere. And I didn't have a positive thought in me. And I finally get back there. And I do notice that when I'm walking into the house at 32nd and T, there isn't any wind. And so we go in the house, and I'm relating all this stuff to Carol and whoever else is there, a bunch of people there, and And now I've been cursed. I've gone to the center of the universe and I'm cursed and I don't know how I'm going to get out of this. And I had the audacity to tell Carol, two suicides on her hands, right? Says, you know something, Carol? I think the only way out of this is going to be suicide. And she didn't say anything. I think hopefully she just walked away. I don't know. I don't remember now. But all these bad thoughts, and it's like I went to the center of the universe and the gears now, there's a big gear set. And now the gears don't fit. And nothing fits anymore. And I think maybe if I went back to the center of the universe, I'm doing LSD, right? And that I can fit in for some different gears. So I go back. We go back. But there were several people that went with us. Bob went back, but there was also this other girl that went with us too. And I said, maybe if we go back and we step on it again, so she's going to help me plug in for a new universe. When we walked out the door, I said, notice there's no wind. Okay. We all noticed it. So we get back to 35th and R, and the wind is whipping again around this intersection. I, to this day, yes, I was on drugs and who knows what the person sees, but I know when the wind is blowing and when it's not. And I go back there and I come back to the plate and I stand on the plate again and this other girl steps on it too and it's like, it's over. I plugged in for a new universe and the gears now fit and I didn't have all these negative thoughts anymore. And I'm thinking, whoa, something's happened here. So we go back to the house and I'm not having all the negative thoughts and I'm thinking I am going to survive this. I'm not going to have to commit suicide to survive this. And somehow God is involved in all this, that it was angelic or something. I think the devil had a back of my neck, but something was going on. And plus, this was like a Saturday night. Mary Kay goes off to the Catholic Church on Sunday morning. And she comes back and she says, well, it was kind of an interesting sermonette on Sunday. And he was in Daniel chapter 12. Whoa, I have a brother named Daniel. How ironic is that? Well, reading out of the book of Daniel, and you know, I'm just coming off an LSD trip and all these things, everything is symbolic when you're doing all this stuff. So I'm thinking, how symbolic is this? You know, she's in the book of Daniel and she's in Daniel 12 that talks about the great prince Michael. Okay, my name is Michael from the book of Daniel. My brother's name is Daniel. God is speaking to me. And he says, Michael is a great prince who stands for the children of your people. And I really love children. In fact, at the time, I was working at a child care center. I graduated from the university, and I've got a job in a child care center, and I'm working with kids. And I think, man, this Bible verse is talking about me. And I don't know what it means or anything, but somehow the Bible is somehow significant. Well, now I'm trying to find somebody who knows something about the Bible to tell me something about my life and get me straightened around in this great quest for truth. And the only person I know that knows anything about the Bible is my brother, Daniel. So I call him up. Daniel's a Jehovah's Witness. And so now I tell Daniel, my Jehovah's Witness brother, that I've gone to the center of the universe and Mary Kay has picked out some stuff from Daniel. So I need some explanation and I'm sure he thinks I'm nuts, but he says, well, I'll send a couple guys over with their little green truth book and we'll get you straightened out. So I said, okay, do it. I need to find out something about this Bible. So Mary Kay and I now sit down with the Jehovah's Witnesses. And they did bring the Bible. I think Mary Kay might still have that New World Translation that we eventually went to a Bible church. That's the only Bible we had. She took the New World Translations to the Bible church. But in any case, we're sitting down studying with the Jehovah's Witnesses. And but I remember arguing with these people on a couple passages that they would go to. James is one of the big ones, and that you're saved by works and not by faith, and even trying to use James. But even then, I didn't know anything about the Bible. But I'm looking at these passages and saying, you know, this isn't right. They're not interpreting this right. And so I thought, nah, I don't think Jehovah's Witnesses are right. I'm still questing truth. Actually, I'm still in school. I'm studying psychology at the time. And I'm trying to find some answers to truth. And I had a particular professor that particular semester that was a survey of children's literature. And we were looking at all books, these kids' books. Well, they're really adult books, but they kind of use children in them. The Lord of the Rings, we read a couple of volumes of The Lord of the Rings by Tolkien, who was a strong believer. We read a couple of C.S. Lewis, Chronicles of Narnia. We read Madeleine L'Engle's A Wrinkle in Time, which I don't think is a Christian, but spiritual. And all this stuff still keep moving toward God. And so God is trying to get a hold of me. And I'm thinking, I've got to find out something. And I'm down on campus again. I remember standing out by the fountain down at University of Nebraska. Somebody comes up to me and says, you believe in God? And the sucker I am. And instead of just saying, go away, I'm not, say, yeah, okay, let's talk. Yeah, I've come to a place where I believe there is a God. He says, well, do you believe that Jesus is the Son of God? And I says, well, okay, yeah, I think in some respect Jesus is the Son of God. Well, he says, did you know that Jesus walked on a North American continent? And I said, oh, I don't think I'd ever heard that one. And so now, I said, well, you want us to tell you more? Sure, come on over, let's study. These are the Mormons. So now I'm studying with the Mormons and thinking I'm going to find some truth. And I studied with them for a while, and I didn't get anything out of that. And pretty soon I asked them, don't come back anymore. And but I'm still questing this truth. At least I'm seeking out the Bible now. And out of the suicide of Bill, Bill's brother came to Christ. And he now invites Carol to a Bible study. And Carol was okay about going, but she didn't want to go by herself, so she invited us to go. And I'm with Mary Kay, and I'm thinking, you know, I don't need this stuff. But Mary Kay was really losing it. She was married to a guy who used to be into alcohol and get drunk every week, and now he's smoking pot every day and doing LSD every other weekend, and she's having a hard time. And she would seek various spiritual avenues, back to the Catholic, down to the church at campus and, you know, various places, and it wasn't cutting it. It wasn't helping her. So I said, okay, we'll go to this Bible study. Not for my sake. I don't need it. In fact, I'm not all that excited about hanging around with a bunch of goody-goody Christians anyway. Well, they all got all the answers, and they're right and I'm wrong. But I'll go for Mary Kay's sake. So Mary Kay's been on this roller coaster ride with me all of these years, and it makes me think of Fred Astaire. Fred Astaire was a great dancer, and he always got the acclaim for his dancing. He danced very often with Ginger Rogers. But Ginger Rogers, I mean, for people in the know, they would say, yeah, she's a good dancer. But she'd never famous dancer like Fred Astaire was dancer. And yet Ginger Rogers would do everything that Fred Astaire did in heels and backwards. And it just, I was just thinking of this in regard to Mary Kay. You know, I'm going through all of this crazy stuff. She's going through it with me, but in heels and backwards. And she needs some help. So I said, okay, we'll go to this Bible study. So it's an Old Testament walkthrough, and it was very energetic, and the guy'd stand up in the middle of the living room and draw this imaginary line down the middle of the living room. Here's the Jordan River, and here's over here is the Ur of the Chaldees where Abraham started. He comes over here. And it was really fun, and I really enjoyed it. And I ignored the gospel tracts that they'd always be putting on the coffee table for me to read and pick up, and the little hints on going to church and all this stuff. And I'm not at all interested in going to church. It's just a bunch of hypocrites, and I'm not going that route. But I went to the Bible study. And then the last 2 weeks of the Bible study, it was a walkthrough up to using King David, basically Old Testament walkthrough, and then using King David as a type of a righteous king, and Jesus was a type of Christ. He was the ultimate righteous king. I thought, okay. And then they were saying, finally, he says, you need to believe that Jesus Christ died for your sins. Okay. Now here it comes. They're trying to tell me what I got to believe. I don't know why Jesus any more than Krishna or Buddha. And, death doesn't sound like any kind of a victory to me. And, sin, I'm pretty much dismissed sin like everybody else, not any worse than anybody else. So, but I thought that somehow there's some significance of this. I don't understand it at all. Jesus Christ died for my sins. Jesus Christ died for my sins. I don't make any sense of it. So we went out. I went out by myself in my Volkswagen camper van. I was a real hippie wannabe. And we were living out at the airport, out by the old Air Force Base in Lincoln. And there's a little lake out there. And I drove my camper van out there by the lake. And I'm crying out sincerely to God. I said, God, I, I want to know you, and I want to make some sort of sense out of Jesus Christ died for my sins, but it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't get it. So the next Sunday was Easter Sunday, 1974. And for some odd reason, we go to church. We went to Indian Hills Church. And Gil Rue, still preaching up there, he was preaching through the book of Romans in Romans chapter 6. And he says, death, burial, and resurrection in Christ. He says, all of us have sinned. Sin penalty is death, but Jesus Christ paid it in our place. And you need to believe Him as taking the sacrifice for you. Jesus Christ died for my sins. Now suddenly, at least, I understand it. Okay, now, I believe that Jesus Christ died for my sins. And I believe that Mary Kay and I both trusted Christ on that Sunday. And it was significant enough to her that she didn't even go to the Catholic Church then after church. I mean, if I had ever, for some odd reason, want her to go to the Episcopal Church with me, who knows why, she would go, but she'd still have to go to the Catholic Church. Well, now we're going to the Bible Church, and she doesn't go to the Catholic. It's very significant. So I believe on that Sunday we were both saved. And now, Mary Kay being the great churchgoer, she wants to go to this church on Sunday. And I'm thinking, listen, I'm saved by grace, not by works. I don't have to do anything, and I don't plan on it. So I'm not going to church. So she went to church on her own and taking her little green New World translations that she got from the Jehovah's Witnesses to church. It's the only Bible she had. So pretty soon she's doing this, and then we got invited to a Bible study that was on Monday nights out at Indian Hills. And it wasn't churchy. It wasn't like going to church. These people were mostly college students. There were some long hairs there, and I had hair to my shoulders. And there were hippie types there. So I figured, well, this is kind of a safer atmosphere. So I go there, and this guy, Chester McCauley, Chet McCauley, would fly up. He had his own plane. Fly up from Kansas City just to teach his Bible study on Monday nights at Indian Hills. It was fantastic. And he was teaching through the book of Hebrews. And I thought, you know, I'm suddenly beginning to realize this stuff is true, and I love this stuff. And as usual, if I enjoyed anything straight, I would enjoy it better if I was stoned. So I thought, I'm going to start toking up some weed before I go to the Bible study. And I did that a couple times, and it was just kind of foggy to me, and it just wasn't settling in my brain. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm thinking maybe this isn't the right way to seek after God. So I quit smoking dope. And pretty soon I combed my hair, and I remember going down in the basement, and I'd have a candle sitting there, and I'd try to fold my legs like you meditate. I never could get them right. But I would stare at this candle and try not to think, you know, like the Buddhists and the Hindus do. And I was still into the place where, you know, I believe Jesus is the way, but I'm not sure that about these other ways. And then pretty soon, I think it was Chester McCauley, and I kept hearing this John 14:6. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. And I realized that, you know, Jesus is the only way to everlasting life. And pretty soon things started falling out of my life. And it isn't because somebody approached me and says, well, you can't be a Christian and smoke dope. I mean, I might tell somebody now, but nobody was telling me this stuff. And you can't go bar hopping and be a Christian. You just don't do those things. And you can't drop acid and be a Christian. The Christians don't do it. Nobody was telling me that stuff. But pretty soon these things started dropping out of my life because I was getting into God's Word. And I was studying it for myself. And pretty soon I started, there was a guy that was going there on Monday nights that was teaching Greek. And so I thought, you know, the New Testament was written in Greek. I want to learn some Greek. So I'm sitting down with him, and pretty soon he's getting so busy. He's a college student. He's got midterms, and he can't do it anymore. So I decided to just teach myself. So I stayed with the book. I went through that book, and then there was a preacher that came up to Indian Hills one weekend. He was teaching the life of Christ. His name was S. Lewis Johnson. He's dead now, but he was a godly man. He was a professor at Dallas Seminary, and he taught that whole weekend on the life of Christ, Friday night, all day Saturday, Sunday. And I was sitting at his feet one time after he was preaching, and he said, you know, he said, some of you might be interested in going to seminary. And I'm thinking, well,
I think maybe I'd like to go to seminary. I needed to know more and more about this Bible. I was just falling in love with it. I couldn't get enough of the Bible. I was going Tuesday mornings, Wednesday nights, Sunday nights, Sunday morning. Now I'd even go to church on Sundays just to hear the Bible taught, because Indian Hills and Gilroo preached through the Bible. And that church has gotten tons of criticism over the years. I've criticized it myself at times. But God used that man, Gilroo, and that church to bring me from death to life. And God used it powerfully. He's used another man in Lincoln called Kevin Pringle that preached here last Sunday that God used to change my life. And but now I'm thinking maybe I ought to go to seminary, but I don't have any money. And I remember asking S. Lewis Johnson, he says, I think maybe, you know, I might ought to go to seminary, but I don't have anything. I don't have any money. And he said, listen, if you think God is directing you to seminary, don't let money stop you. Money will not be in your way. Now, I believed the guy. You know, so we had a big garage sale. We had a freezer and stuff that we sold. We ended up $500, I think, out of that garage sale. We moved. I'd applied. I sent off an application to Dallas Seminary, and I did never really expect to get accepted at a seminary. I mean, I've never even been to college, and I mean, I'd never even been to Bible college, and I'd only been a Christian for about a year. This was spring of '74, and I'm sending this thing off probably in the summer of 75. I think, well, I'll send it off Dallas Seminary. Now we're going to get accepted anyway. And then about November, I think it was, or early December, and I'm thinking maybe I should send one off to Grace Seminary in Indiana. That's where Gilroo had gone. I think maybe if they won't accept me at Dallas, maybe they accept me at this place. And no sooner did I decide to do that than I get this letter from Dallas Seminary. And maybe one of the most significant, happiest days of my life, to open up this letter and to be accepted by somebody. And Dallas Seminary accepted me to go to their school. I mean, it's because they didn't know me, obviously. Most of the people go there are brilliant people. They're guys that are single, that can devote all of their time to study, don't have to work. They've been to Bible college already, and now they're in seminary. I didn't know anything. I got accepted, and I started in the fall of 76. I didn't have any Bible college. I hardly knew anything, but I did teach myself Greek. And I got the textbook that they'd used for first year Greek at Dallas Seminary. I went through that thing twice on my own, passed out of first year Greek. So maybe I wasn't as stupid as I thought I was. But in any case, they accepted me, and hardly anybody ever accepted me other than Indian Hills accepted me completely. I look back at that church now, and I wonder why. There's all kinds of rumors. They have stories about me now that float around at Indian Hills, that I came to church, you know, that first time barefoot and all that stuff. And I think I had shoes on. I didn't have a shirt on, but I had bib overalls on, and I was decently dressed. But there's things float around. But those people accepted me. They didn't tell me how I was supposed to live. The people in the Bible study on the Monday night didn't tell me that I couldn't do this and couldn't do this. And pretty soon these things just started falling away. My life was changing by the grace of God and that power. And every day I come to a deeper realization of that grace. That I didn't come to God on my own merits. I used to think that I kept seeking God. Went back to college to seek God. Studied with the Mormons and the Jehovah's Witness to seek God. But every time somebody with the answers of God come up to me, I didn't want any part of them. So I had to realize it wasn't because of my seeking. It was because of God seeking me. And He drew me so gradually and so graciously to Himself. Needless to say, I didn't deserve it. I don't deserve it to this day. I don't deserve to have this church with you people in it that I have this day. It is all of the grace of God. But I finally came to that realization that Jesus died for me. He took my place on that cross. Maybe you're here this morning, and maybe those are just words to you. And the whole religious scene, that it's just a matter of being religious. All the churches are the same. They're not all the same. There are so many churches that aren't preaching the word. There's so many churches that don't focus upon the grace of God and simple faith. And God used those things to draw me and Mary Kay to himself. We've been growing ever since. We've had some ups and downs. We've had some times where I was so sick of evangelicals and Bible churches that I didn't want anything to do with them anymore. And I'd resigned from a couple of them with a little help. They kind of wanted me to go anyway. But and where I said, I don't want anything to do with evangelicalism. I don't want anything to do with the right wings. I re-registered as a Democrat, and I didn't want anything to do with the right. Well, God has brought me around to where I appreciate even Donald Trump. And I think it's the greatest thing to ever happen to America in a long time. But don't turn me off because you're politically different than me. But God has done a powerful work in my life, Mary Kay's life, and I wanted to share that with you. And I say that I do that with fear and trembling because usually I'm preaching the word. I'm talking about Jesus Christ. I'm not talking about Mike McDonald. But it is a testimony of what God has done in my life. It's not what I've done. It's what God has done. And I play a role in it. And I wrestle with that all the time. What part is God's part? What part is from sovereign eternity past? It's all planned what God's going to do. And I don't do anything. Well, how do I fit in all of that eternal plan of God? I used to wrestle with that on LSD trips. And now I still wrestle with the issue of what's my part, what's God's part. I don't know. I do not have it figured out, but there's my part and there's God's part. And somehow we come together. And God uses us. And I hope that He uses you. And I hope He brings all of you back and you invite others to come and just simply to hear the Word. Next week I'll be back in Revelation 15, to see what God says to us. And it's life-changing. Let me close this with a prayer. Father, I thank You for all of the circumstances in our lives and the lives of those represented here, all the things that have brought us to this point today. And I pray, Father, if there's anyone who needs to place their faith in Jesus Christ, Him alone, it's not our works, it's not our goodness, it's all of God's work in sending His Son to take a penalty. Your Son, O God, took the penalty we deserved, and He rose up again from the dead. Write it upon our hearts, O God. Change our lives and build Your church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. In Jesus' name, amen.